fourth case of the day, Mock v. Will County Sheriff. Mr. Baker.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Goulet. Mike Mock filed an age discrimination and employment act case in the district court, and we are before this court asking the court to reverse two rulings of the district court judge. The first one is the ruling that granting summary judgment in favor of the defendant. The second one deals with the issue of whether the district court appropriately ordered that Michael Mock pay a portion of attorney's fees that were ordered by the court. If it is acceptable with the court, I would like to start with the latter issue first, the issue of attorney's fees. In this case, Judge Zagel entertained a motion allowing or requesting attorney's fees. The motion originally requested that all of the attorney's fees, or I believe all the attorney's fees, be paid. Judge Zagel concluded that was not appropriate, but that a portion of the attorney's fees attributable to the summary judgment pleadings should be awarded. And what Judge Zagel concluded was, and the standard under the ADEA I think is fairly clear, that in order for an award of attorney's fees, there's got to be bad faith or the corollary Rule 11 sanction. What Judge Zagel said was that the bad faith in this case came when, prior to the summary judgment motion being filed, Mock did not notify the other side that he was going to abandon some of his claims at summary judgment. Now, I think that is a problematic conclusion for multiple reasons. First of all, the court found that there was no evidence of bad faith up and until that particular point. Second of all, oftentimes when an attorney is responding to a motion for summary judgment, you are for the first time sitting down and you are taking all the pieces of evidence that have been gathered throughout the course of litigation, and you are essentially assembling this puzzle in how you respond. And oftentimes it's not until you see the evidence that is being presented by the other side that you can make a determination, do I have a good argument to go forward on this particular issue? In this particular case, Mr. Mock decided, for differing reasons, to abandon five of the six claims and instead focus on one particular issue of discrimination. The district court suggested or found that Mock should have notified the other side. The problem with that is, by taking that approach, it completely eviscerates the procedure that has been adopted under Federal Rule 11. And Federal Rule 11 creates a safe harbor provision. And in this particular case, had the defendants come forward and had they written a letter and said, gee, we think that these particular issues, there's not enough evidence to support them, would you be willing to withdraw them, then we could have addressed that and dealt with it at that particular time. That did not happen in this case. I think that it is important to look at the advisory committee notes to Rule 11, because when Rule 11 was modified in 1993, the committee addressed this very issue, and I've cited it in my reply brief, but I do think it's important. And it says, under the former rule, parties were sometimes reluctant to abandon a questionable contention lest that be viewed as evidence of a violation of Rule 11. Under the revision, the timely withdrawal of a contention will protect a party against a motion for sanctions. Now, there's a lot of good practical sense to that provision.
Well, what's timely, though? Was yours timely? The withdrawal of those issues?
The withdrawal of those issues came in response to the motion for summary judgment.
Was that timely?
Well, I believe that it was. I mean, I think that when you approach an employment discrimination case, you have to look at it from the perspective of you're gathering a lot of different pieces of evidence. You're gathering documents. You're gathering personnel records. You're gathering deposition testimony. You're subpoenaing a variety of things. It all comes together from a practical perspective at the time you were writing your summary judgment brief. And I think, Judge Kaney, the problem with the conclusion of the district court is Mr. Mock probably would have been in better shape if he had made some type of a perfunctory argument as to these 5 points. You know, we could have done that. We could have brought together evidence, made a perfunctory argument that was supported by some evidence in the record, and probably avoided this. We chose the other route. We chose the route that would ease the burden on the court, and it would also ease the reply burden on the defendant. And I think that what is said here is very practical, because if this court says, look, if you abandon a claim at summary judgment, you run the risk of sanctions being imposed against you. Well, attorneys, I mean, from my perspective, great, we're going to fight every single claim because there's no incentive for us not to do it. And, you know, Rule 11 is set up to deal with this very specific issue. When they were drafting their summary judgment brief, they could have sent me a letter and they could have said, we don't believe that there is sufficient evidence to support these points. You know, under Rule 11, we believe that you should withdraw them. That's the proper way to handle this. Because the practical impact of this is an attorney's going, no matter what the issue is, an attorney's going to have to fight it. They're not going to concede issues on summary judgment. And I guess I would put it in the reverse. Many times when representing plaintiffs in employment discrimination cases, the defendants, particularly in a termination case, routinely file as part of their answer an affirmative defense stating that the defendant failed to mitigate their damages. They don't know that. They don't know that what the defendant has done to mitigate their damages at the time, but they file that. Now, typically, evidence comes through and it shows that they did mitigate their damages, and the issue just sort of goes away. Now, under the way the rules are set up now, I could go forward, I could file a motion for summary judgment arguing that, look, there's no evidence that he didn't fail to mitigate the damages. I put together a summary judgment, I can win summary judgment as to that particular point. Well, under Judge Zagel's rationale in this case, I should therefore be entitled to fees.
Well, but maybe the claim wouldn't have been made initially, Mr. Baker.
Sorry?
Under your hypothetical, maybe the failure to mitigate issue might not have even arise if discovery wouldn't produce evidence to support it. Or on the other hand, let me just phrase it this way. How do we handle with the situation where frivolous, and I'm not suggesting that's your case, but frivolous claims or claims really lacking in merit, maybe just above the cut of frivolousness, but not much, are maintained until summary judgment?
Well,
how do we monitor that, or district courts monitor that, other than your suggestion of, well, at the time of summary judgment, the opposing side should make a Rule 11 motion?
The district court can do the same thing. Under Rule 11, the district court on its own motion, sua sponte, can request that there be a rule to show cause. There's a provision under Rule 11 that says to an attorney, you know, come forward here and explain why Rule 11 sanctions shouldn't be imposed.
Don't we want counsel on their own to prune the case earlier than that?
Earlier than summary judgment?
Well, I mean, if you've made claims that are not, discovery is not buttressing those, should we always wait till summary judgment? I guess that's what we're faced with here.
Well, I think that is what we are faced with here. I think that the problem becomes with that, how do you monitor it? A defendant could raise a legal argument that's a very solid legal argument and say, look, for this reason, these cases don't apply. As a practitioner, you might never have thought of that particular argument. And so you say, yeah, you know what, I am going to concede that particular point. And
well, why don't we look at this case perhaps in case-specific terms?
All right.
What would you say to the abandonment of the five? What of the five claims, what would you say to why they were abandoned?
Reality is I don't remember the specific reasons right now as to why they were abandoned, but I think that there were multiple reasons. Number one, all of the evidence was presented in a concise, cogent manner at the summary judgment pleading. Number two, from a strategic standpoint, as an attorney, I think that typically I buy myself some credibility with the district court judge when I concede points that aren't very well taken. And my concern here is that the district court approach is, yeah, you go ahead, and if you think you have any valid measure, you fight it, you fight it, you fight it. So, you know, I guess my practice, since I practice in this area almost solely, has taught me you learn to pick and choose your battles, and I think that's the appropriate way. I know my time has expired. I do appreciate the court entertaining my argument. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Gulley.
Good morning, Your Honors. Terry Gallet for the Will County Sheriff Council. Council spent his time discussing the sanctions issue. I'll focus on that. I will note that for purposes of the briefing and the reply, our factual arguments were not responded to. While there's not a concession there, I think the court can take interest that on the sixth of the six claims, we're really not at issue on that. As to the sanctions issue, Judge Zagel certainly does make a point of plaintiff's failure to withdraw the first five of his six claims before the time of the response brief on summary judgment. However, I don't think we can read Judge Zagel's order that narrowly to just say it's that small window of time that he's looking at. The fact of the matter is, plaintiff chooses the forum, plaintiff chooses the facts, plaintiff chooses the arguments when they file a suit. Here they brought six very separate claims of discrimination against the Will County Sheriff. Defense counsel and the sheriff's office was burdened with the task of responding to all six. Now, not to take away the idea of tactical issues and such that might be made in a briefing stage, the fact of the matter remains that when push came to shove, it was shown that there was absolutely no merit to five of the six claims.
Shouldn't there be a sort of a safe harbor then? Counsel does make a point that then forget about it and we'll just argue them. You know?
Well, that would have been a response, but I think certainly they would have been protected in that sort of a response if they had shown something in the briefing before this court that they had evidence. Certainly they could have brought some motion in front of Judge Zagel. When Judge Zagel enters a sanctions award, something to respond to that, no, actually, we did have good faith for these five claims, but defendants proved elsewise. Now, at the summary judgment stage from the defendant's standpoint...
Well, is it the point that it was the withdrawal came way too late, should have happened earlier, or the fact that they should never have been filed?
I think we can't rule that last part out of Judge Zagel's ruling because I think connected with the idea that plaintiff does not have a basis to go forward at the summary judgment stage with five of the six, it begs the question, well, what support was there to begin with? Certainly, in several instances, many of Plaintiff Mock's claims were proved to be frivolous. In particular, on the teach training courses, I'll pick that one out. Evidence showed that actually people that were allowed to continue training those courses were actually older than Mr. Mock. Any sort of evaluation would have brought a question about whether this is a claim we want to burden defendants with going forward. Now, the sanctions issue, and I think counsel has agreed with this, is an abuse of discretion standard. Now, Judge Zagel, in monitoring his court and his caseload, certainly has discretion to look at claims. Was there a good faith for them to be filed? Now, we're at this point, we're relying on counsel's representations that there was a good faith belief to file these claims. Well, the record shows no good faith supporting that. All we have is we get to the response to the summary judgment, and these claims are dropped. That said, up to that point, defendants were burdened with responding to all six of the claims. Certainly. Now, Judge Zagel did tailor his sanctions award to, in two respects. One, he certainly did not go for the whole defense cost. Defense costs in this case were well over $60,000. It's a lot of money. Judge Zagel did note, though, that those were low by standards in this court. I took that as a compliment. The fact of the matter is, the sanction award of fees of $12,000 was narrowly tailored to the fact that we had to respond to five issues. 83% of the issues in this case evidently had no support, or no support has been brought forward by plaintiff to support them. So in looking at the issue, I think Judge Zagel was definitely within his discretion to fix a proper sanction. Now, counsel did not raise the issue of the costs. That was also part of our petition for costs at the end of the summary judgment stage. Those are absolutely proper. Now, in terms of the context of the case, though, I think it is important to point out that the record was replete with numerous pages-long discussions of instances that Mr. Mock's performance was deficient. Mr. Mock has admitted that Director Horwath, who he based his whole claim on, he has no base to say that Director Horwath in any way skewed Mr. Mock's numbers in the analysis that was performed. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that any animus that Mr. Mock Mr. Horwath may have had for Mr. Mock, that this was ever communicated up the chain of command. We have evidence that Sheriff Kaupis actually rejected the recommendation of Director Howarth, Chief Deputy Moss, and Chief Maher that Mock be put down in patrol. We have vague references that this should be cat's paw and all of that. The fact of the matter is there's no evidence supporting that. Well, certainly from the defense standpoint, we did not make the presentation that the whole case was frivolous. The fact of the matter is that the one of the six claims that plaintiff went forward on was shown to have no merit. Barring any further questions, I'll yield my time.
All right. Mr. Baker, your time has expired. You may have a minute, though.
Thank you very much, Judge Fulham. I do appreciate that. I would ask that the court review Judge Zagel's order because on the fees. He does not say that the case was litigated in bad faith. And I think the order fairly well speaks for itself. I focused on that issue in my initial statement. My brief speaks to a number of the issues that I raise, and I would ask that the court on the cat's paw issue look at the Lust v. Seeley decision, because I think that is applicable as to what standard of evidence is relevant. So unless the court has any further questions, I will just ask that the court reverse both rulings by Judge Zagel, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.